Hello, and welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I am the host of this talk show on travel. And this week, I am taking you to France. You know that that's one of my very favorite destinations, having lived in Paris 11 years and having written 4 books on France, 3 on Paris, 1 on the provinces. I am definitely a Francophile, I have to admit it. And I found a wonderful book that came out this year entitled Lunch in Paris, A Love Story with Recipes by Elizabeth Bard. And that came out this past winter, published by Little Brown. And it took me on a wonderful journey to France, and anybody that has an interest in France would enjoy it. And actually, anybody that loves a good love story would enjoy it. And I have the author on the phone from France. I would like to welcome Elizabeth Bard to Travel Fun. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Mary Beth.
It's nice to have you here. I have to say that you're in Provence at the moment. You moved down there a little bit less than a year ago, so that's sort of a new chapter in your life, might even say a new book in your life, but we'll talk about that in the second half of the show. Let's first talk about your relationship with Paris, and it really comes through in Lunch in Paris. The story is about how you fell in love with France and also a Frenchman.
Sure. Well, it's a dual process, and it was a sort of, you might even call it a dual seduction, because I was kind of seduced by my husband and seduced by the city at the same time. And when I was making the decision to stay, I knew that I couldn't only be in love with my future husband. I had to also be in love with the city itself and feel that I could make a life there and be myself there and create a real life for myself. So it was a dual seduction.
Talk about those first moments, those first months when you discovered Paris and the French way of life, and how you recount that in your book, Lunch in Paris.
Well, I think, once again, like any love story, there's a sort of intoxication period where you're completely overwhelmed by new sights and new smells, and everything tastes better and looks better, and just it's that classic lovey-dovey feeling that I had for the city. And then you realize that, you know, you don't know how to go to the post office or take anything to the dry cleaner or order a leg of lamb at the butcher, and you're just this, you all of a sudden feel like this completely helpless, babbling child. And I had some French classes in high school and at university, and I still felt like I had this really only very basic grasp of the knowledge. And even outside of the grasp of the language, I felt like I didn't have the cultural references that I needed to interact with people, you know, in the way that I wanted to. It was a strange kind of muteness that kind of overtook those first impressions, and that was really hard. There's a kind of, I think there was a long period of time, I would say after the infatuation stage, when I felt a little bit invisible. You know, somebody who is, I've always been a lover of words and books, and to be somebody who was suddenly inarticulate was really, really difficult for me. I felt like it was a huge portion of my personality that had suddenly been erased. You can't make a joke. You can't make a reference. You can't say something funny or charming at a party. And that was a real, you know, it takes a long time to build that confidence back up.
And that, of course, you reveal in your book, Lunch in Paris, along with the seduction of falling in love with Paris, falling in love with France, and falling in love with your Frenchman. Tell us about some of the pearls, if you will, of French life or Parisian life, or some of those pivotal moments where you just felt like your senses were totally aroused and that you were in the city of light and love and living it firsthand.
Well, it's, I think a lot of those moments happened for me at the markets, and really in the kitchen. I mean, one of the reasons why I decided to make Lunch in Paris not only a love story but also a cookbook was because I realized when I went back in my head to just to think about how I really discovered life in France, almost all the experiences that I came back to happened what we would say in French, autour de la table, right, around the table. So either at a market or at a meal or with a recipe or sharing food with people is just such an integral part of the culture. So it really, it made sense to kind of structure the book around those food experiences. And of course, the outdoor markets for me, we lived in Paris in the 10th arrondissement, which is by the Canal Saint-Martin, which is now a very sort of chichi, hip and trendy, area. But when we first got there, you know, Grendel had his little unheated, you know, two burner kitchen studio apartment that was in, you know, and there were drug dealers up the street and squatters down the street, and you know, it was just, it was not a chic neighborhood at all. And my first experience actually of Paris was of the North African market on the Boulevard de Belleville, up at the Belleville metro stop on Tuesdays and Fridays. And that was my, you know, that was my introduction. Those were the first people that I actually talked to. When I didn't have any friends and I didn't have a job, I spent a lot of time, you know, talking to the guy who sold me my tomatoes and my mackerel. So those were some of my first experiences.
In your book, you have some lovely recipes, and you have a section here entitled Recipes for Seduction, and you have the recipe for fresh mint tea, thé à la menthe, which is actually very North African, and since there are so many North Africans in Paris, they do drink a fair amount of it in Paris, especially in the neighborhood where you lived. Another recipe that I found really endearing was the student Charlotte.
Sure.
Would you?
And that's one of the funny things about that student Charlotte was that I came for the weekend, and you know, like a lady, I had my own hotel room, you know, because I'm a lady, and I don't just, you know, go home with any gentleman that I, you know, don't quite know. And he had that Charlotte waiting in the refrigerator of his apartment, and I thought to myself, now, is that endearing, or that he cooked in advance for me, or is that a bit caddish? You know, I couldn't quite decide, but in the end, I decided it was endearing that he had made the Charlotte in advance for my, you know, for my coming, even though he didn't know what was going to happen, or maybe he did know what was going to happen.
I love what you wrote. You said, a real Charlotte is a ritzy affair made with crème pâtissière and ladyfinger soaked in alcohol. To this day, I prefer the student version, fromage blanc or Greek yogurt, and canned apricots straight from the market. And you have three ingredients here in this Charlotte, and it is just so easy to make. It sounds like that. It really tells a story. I haven't tried making it, but it sounds like fun.
Yeah, no, it's super easy, and it's actually completely irresistible. It's a really good brunch dessert. It's actually going to be one of the first recipes I know that I'm going to try with my son, because it's more of an arts and crafts project than it is a recipe, actually. So you just have to kind of put things together. That's a good one. That's in my husband's bachelor repertoire.
Right. And then you actually have another recipe for duck breasts with blackberries. And that's something that somebody might think, oh, that's such a French dish and it sounds incredibly intimidating. but your recipe seems quite simple. And
yeah, no, that's a one frying pan thing. I mean, duck breasts, you know, cook almost instantaneously. And I think French cooking has a really undeserved reputation for being complicated and fussy. In fact, if you start with really good fresh ingredients, seasonal ingredients, you really don't need to do a whole lot to them to make them taste good. And that duck recipe is a perfect example. You know, duck, the way that the French eat it, is very pink on the inside, so you only kind of need to cook it just barely on both sides. And the sauce is a simple kind of crush the berries and a little bit of butter and a little bit of sherry vinegar, and you're done. It's a, like a 10-minute dinner.
Okay. When reading your book, one swoons with all the romance of Paris. Or at least I did. I'm a hopeless romantic, and of course, I'm still crazy about Paris. Why do you think Paris is so romantic?
I think it has something to do with, there's a combination of the aesthetics, you know, which are the architecture, the light, this kind of gray and slightly sort of dusky light. And I think the pace. I think one of the things that Americans find so attractive about Paris is the leisurely pace of things, and then the way that you're able to sort of slow down a little and soak things up and enjoy them properly. And I, you know, I was born a type A New York, you know, straight arrow to-do list kind of girl. And for me, you know, Paris was a real, just taking that time to take pleasure in things was a real indulgence for me. And it's, I'm not sure I could ever go back. I think I might be permanently sort of on a slower gear than I was. And it's not considered a waste of time to take time to take pleasure in things. And I think that's so important.
Especially when it comes to eating.
The French do take their time with meals. I mean, I do remember, I think one of the universal things that Americans have to get used to, I've heard this from almost every American that I've ever encountered in France, is that the memories of that interminable French dinner party, the first one that they went to, which lasts for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, and you're just sitting there from 7 in the evening until 2 or 3 in the morning, and you just think to yourself, I'm going to pass out. I'm literally going to fall underneath the table. There's such a joy in kind of sitting there and the conversation and the different courses and everything kind of unfolding. It's very, very theatrical.
I love that word, theatrical. That's a great way to describe it, especially, well, I think of it in terms of that if you go to a very fine restaurant, but if you're received by French people, it can be theatrical as well. What are some of your favorite romantic things to do in Paris, or romantic sights?
Well, we have a real affection for the Bertillon stands on the Île Saint-Louis. Bertillon is Paris's best ice cream, and of course the best ice cream makers in Paris, naturally being French, take all of the month of July and August when they could be making a fortune. They're on vacation, and they leave the ice cream selling to everybody else. And we, you know, we would take our cones of wild berry, wild strawberry sorbet, and bitter chocolate sorbet. So it's, if you're going to order, it's cacao amer, which is bitter chocolate, and fraise de bois, which is wild strawberry. That would be my recommendation. And Bertillon ice cream is just, it's all over the Île Saint-Louis, and you can kind of walk around the island and even sit down on the tip of the island. And that used to be one of our favorite things to do. Just walking. We did a lot of walking when I first came to Paris, and a lot of looking and peeking into people's doorways. A lot of Paris is actually hidden behind the street, and if you kind of follow old ladies into doorways and push past people into the courtyards, you see a whole different side of Paris. We spent a lot of time following people around during those first weekends in Paris, just kind of, it's a very walkable city. I always recommend to people when they travel to Paris not to make too much of a list and of things to see, and just to give themselves a little bit of time to wander, because that's so much of the pleasure in seeing the city is just wandering the streets.
I agree with what you're saying, and actually I would add that you see these incredibly imposing doors, porticos that you wonder what's on the other side. And sometimes, if you go up and just press that little button that's there, typically on the right, and it goes, and buzzes open the door, you can actually just walk in and see a lovely courtyard that reveals a whole different life. And it is fun to do that. And you can do that just as easily in the Bastille neighborhood as in the 7th arrondissement. And, you know, the worst that could happen is that the door doesn't open for you.
you could be like one of those little girls on the elevator just going around pressing buttons and seeing what happens.
What lies behind hidden doors. Now, your story starts out in your book, Lunch in Paris. You're, of course, a single woman throughout most of it. And when you start out, you are very single and not particularly looking for a man. Do you think it's easy for a single woman to find romance in Paris?
I don't know if it's easier. I think sometimes we all do things that when we're in a foreign place that we might not let ourselves do when we're at home. We take different chances and leave ourselves open to different experiences and different events that, because we think, oh gosh, this is not attached to my real life, and so what the hell, I think I'll just go and, have myself an adventure. And certainly that's very liberating, and it was for me. And I think the seriousness of my relationship with Glendale and my husband and my relationship with Paris, the seriousness of it really snuck up on me. And before I knew it, I was completely in over my head.
Okay. I am visiting with Elizabeth Bard, author of Lunch in Paris, a love story with recipes. And it's been a real hit. I believe a bestseller with independent bookstores across the U.S. Is that correct, Elizabeth?
Yeah, no, it's had a really, really wonderful run. I mean, the independent bookstores have been so important in, the word of mouth. It was selected as a Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writers pick. It's been on, a number of the bestseller lists, and there's a 9 or 10 foreign editions in the works. So I've just, for a first book experience, I think I'm having a very knock-on-wood exceptional experience.
Okay. Well, congratulations. Now, why don't you provide your website? Because you have a blog there, and if people want to go
sure.
and find out more information.
I have a blog that I update regularly with new recipes and experiences from our life in Paris and in Provence, and that's on elizabethbard.com. And I also have a Facebook fan page for the book, which I sort of put little tidbits and photos of just little everyday happenings. There's a lot of gardening on there at the moment because it's cherry season, so there's a lot of cherry creations that have been on there lately, and that's www.facebook.com/lunchinparis. I have a Twitter account as well, which is Elizabeth Bard is the Twitter handle. So I try to keep in touch, and that's been a wonderful community. There's a real, as I'm sure you know from all of the work that you've done, there's such a wonderful Francophile community out there, and people who are crazy about France are just crazy about France. And so that's been a wonderful community of people for me to discover and communicate with as well.
Exactly. And I'd like to say Elizabeth Bard, it's Bard, B-A-R-D, in case some people want to take note of that. And I am going to be blogging about Elizabeth, and I should have this interview up as a podcast at my website, blog, and that's bonjourcolorado.com in case you can't hear the rest of the interview. But those of you who can stick around, please do. We are going to finish out with talking a little bit about Provence. Be right back.
Rendez-vous à la brasserie du café de la paix. Je t'attendrai, je porte un feutre de couleur neutre et mon par-dessus n'est pas brillant non plus. Je poserai mon journal sur le bar devant moi. Je poserai mon journal, tu me reconnaîtras. Si t'es en retard, bah c'est le cas. Prendrai un demi pour noyer mon ennui. Si t'es en retard jusqu'au soir, je prendrai un sérieux pour le noyer mieux. Je plierai mon journal sur le bar devant moi. Je plierai mon journal, tu me reconnaîtras. La 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 la.
Hello, and welcome back to Travel Fun. I am visiting with Elizabeth Bard, and we are talking about her book, Lunch in Paris, A Love Story with Recipes. It's brings you on a wonderful trip to France, and we're going to continue our conversation and talk a little bit about Provence, where Elizabeth is currently living with her husband and her little boy, and she's been there for almost a year. And I have to ask you right off, Elizabeth, what do you love most about Provence? I know the list is perhaps long.
I think that I'm enjoying the most right now sort of rediscovering nature. You wouldn't exactly call me, as a native New Yorker, you wouldn't call me nature girl, you know, I'm not a sort of, if you will, natural nature girl. That's not my natural territory. I think the last thing I planted was one of those potatoes on three toothpicks in kindergarten, you know, that you had to stick over a glass of water. So I'm having a lot of fun planting my herb garden, and we have a lovely neighbor who has kind of taken me on as an apprentice in his garden. So I've been planting potatoes, which my mother didn't believe. I actually had to send her photographic proof of the planting of the potatoes, and picking cherries, which is, you know, once again, I'd never seen a cherry tree. I had never, who knew such things existed, but I mean, it's wonderful to be this close to the natural world. I'm a born and raised city girl, and the city gives me so much energy, but this is a very different kind of energy, and it's wonderful.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Provence is such a popular region of France to visit, because people really feel that closeness to nature, either where they are, where they're staying, where they're visiting, and also through the markets, and the produce is exceptional there. And so certainly Provence is a very appreciated destination among Americans. And so I think you're right. It is that nature factor. Now, in your book, Lunch in Paris, you had a lot of recipes, and you were very influenced by the cuisine in France, and particularly in Paris. Are you embracing Provence cuisine, Provençal cuisine, in a similar...
There's no way not to. I mean, because you're surrounded by these utterly amazing products, and you can't help but become a good cook around here. I mean, there's no, the tomatoes themselves are just a masterpiece. You don't have to do anything to them. You just cut them open, salt, olive oil. There's nothing to be done. There's a lot of traditional recipes. I actually just discovered something last night. We were at a dinner party at Friends, and they made what is called in Italy a farinata, and in Provence it's called a socca, which is a sort of, it's a pancake, a very sort of thin crepe-like pancake made with chickpea flour. And they have a lot of chickpeas in Provence, and they also grow a lot of barley and a lot of spelt. So there's a lot of really healthy products, and you just can't help but discover recipes. Every dinner I go to, I'm always scribbling down something on a napkin that I have to make afterwards.
So maybe we can expect the recipe or your version of the recipe for socca in your new book on Provence.
As soon as I get around to experimenting, maybe that'll be the next one up on the blog.
Okay. Can you give us a little bit more about what your book on Provence is going to be about?
Well, it's we've been here for such a short time that things are still marinating. We ended up in Provence. You would call it, it's the sort of happiest of accidents, and I'm not even sure that you could call it an accident. We came here on vacation when I was 6 months pregnant with our son Augustin, who's now almost two, and We were looking for a destination within France because I was pregnant and couldn't fly. And so we decided to come down to Provence to follow in the footsteps of a French poet named René Char, C-H-A-R. And he's a very famous French poet and also was a leader in the French resistance during World War II. And he lived in the village that we are now in during the war and ran the resistance network from this village. And we got to the bed and breakfast, and the people asked us, the people, lovely English couple who runs this bed and breakfast, said, well, why are you here? And we told them the story about René Char, and they said, oh, well, you know, the woman who lived with him during the war and her daughter lived just up the road. Would you like to meet them? And we met the daughter of the woman who was Char's mistress during the war, who is now 76 years old, and she, you know, we had a very Provençal coffee with one coffee, two coffees, three coffees, one cognac, two cognacs, three cognacs, and we were there for the whole afternoon, and she told us all these wonderful stories about the war years and about growing up with René Char, and she asked if we had any questions at the end, and my husband said, well, yes, I'd really like to know where he buried his manuscript, because Char refused to publish during the war, and so he buried his manuscript in the cellar of the house where he was living, and then after the war, dug it up and sent it to Camus, who lived in Paris, and that was the manuscript that made him famous, and they said, sure, we can take you to see the house. It still belongs to our family. And they took us to see the house and took us to the garden and took us to the cellar. And it was so clear we were being taken around by this 76-year-old woman, but somewhere in her soul, she was still 10 years old, kind of taking us around this house and reliving this period of time. And it was so clear that even though she was living during this very dangerous and oppressive time in French history, that she was very happy in this house and that it was a really happy part of her childhood. And I said as much to her, and she said, well, you know, we were really happy here, and it's a bit of a shame because my daughter wants to, I gave this house to my daughter, and my daughter wants to sell the house. And I thought she would, her family would come back to the village, and they don't want to come back to the village, and she wants to sell the house. And Gwendolyn and I just, we walked out, we looked at each other, and we made the decision in 24 hours. We spent a sleepless night back at the bed and breakfast, you know, trying to figure out if we could really swing it. And the next day, we went back and we asked them if we could buy the house.
And it sounds like you're going to weave in at least part of that in your next book that is to be set in Provence. Elizabeth, that's a marvelous story. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I bet you have some more about that in Provence and your life in France on your blog, and that's elizabethbard.com?
Is that
right? Okay. And once again, I've been visiting with Elizabeth Bard, author of Lunch in Paris, A Love Story with Recipes, and I am going to be posting this interview as a podcast at my blog, and that's bonjourcolorado.com. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Oh, Mary Beth, thank you so much for having me, and you know, and just it's always wonderful to discuss France with another true Francophile, another true France lover. So thank you for having me.
It certainly is. À bientôt alors.
À bientôt.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
Come on, fly with me, we'll float down in the blue.